Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is For the Record program number 965. Are we headed for a third world war? This is being recorded on July 11th of the year 2017. This program will involve review of some old information and also the inclusion of new information. The title of the program speaks for itself. There are developments that have taken place and are taking shape that I think augur very poorly for the future and, in fact, for our survival. I am scared, blankless, that there is going to be a Third World War. Things are moving ominously in that direction. And I'm going to cover some of that, or as much of it as I can, in this program. In a nutshell, what we're going to talk about, we're going to begin by talking about the refusal of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, or ODNI, to release even a fully redacted, in other words, a completely blacked-out version of the classified report on, quote, Russian meddling, unquote, in the U.S. election. In many past programs, we've talked about the high-profile hacks, which are, frankly, rather like a cyber version of painting Oswald red. They are, in short, ludicrous. And not only is the simple fact of hacking such that any skilled hacker can go a long way toward masking his or her or their activities as having been perpetrated by someone else, but the high-profile hacks are frankly a joke. And if anyone who believes that would, I guess, be called a low-profile hack in contact with in that context, it is a joke. But again, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has refused to release even a fully redacted version of the classified report. The rationale for that being that this would compromise intelligence sources, including exposing human assets to possibly fatal circumstances. And that, frankly, that dog just won't hunt, as they say. Then following that, we're going to take a look at a passage from the book, They Thought They Were Free, The Germans, 1933 to 1945, by Michael Mayer, edited by Michael Mayer. And in that book, there is an interview with a German professor who lived through the rise of Hitler. He was opposed to Hitler and Nazism, and he spoke about what it was like to live through the rise of Hitler. And he said that one of the things that happened there, what happened here, talking about Germany, 1933 to 1945, was basically, and quoting directly, the gradual habituation of the people little by little to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand because of national security. So dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. Sound familiar? That basically is what we are being told about the report about, quote, Russian meddling, unquote, in the U.S. election. Following that, we are going to review something really just stunning at one level and terrifying at, well, not another, but the same level. Barack Obama called Vladimir Putin last fall on the hotline and basically confronted him about the, quote, Russian meddling, unquote, in the U.S. election and told him to knock it off. Then we are supposed to believe even after that, Russia continued to, quote, meddle in the election. Part of the classified report talks about Vladimir Putin having personally ordered the meddling, although, again, no credible supporting evidence has been released. Indeed, we are told that even a fully redacted version of the report somehow could not be released because it would be so dangerous or because we couldn't understand it, very much like what that German professor described as taking place in Germany. We should note that if, in fact, Putin was trying to influence U.S. foreign policy in a pro-Russian or in a manner that would benefit Russia, defying Obama would basically place a poison pill on any conceivable benefit that Putin could have derived from influencing the U.S. election. In other words, basically, if we are to believe what we are being told, then Putin would have had to have gone completely insane, and there is no indication that he did that. That is bad enough. Again, there was hacking into or attempted hacking or scanning, as we looked at in For the Record 964, of computer systems, electoral computer systems, in a number of states following Obama's phone call with Putin. Obama took a number of steps, including putting NSA-developed cyber weapons on Russian computer systems to be activated in the event of God knows what, a military crisis or future meddling or what have you. If there is anything that would augur a third world war, that is it. And even if that technology is not activated by executive order or whatever in this country, we should note that the technology was developed by the NSA, and the NSA is compromised to the eyeballs at this point. I can't sum up what I've, all of the huge volume of work I've done on Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, who, to make a long story short, is a fascist. The entire milieu, Snowden, WikiLeaks, Glenn Greenwald, Pierre Omidyar, the whole stinking barnyard, tracks as far to the right as possible. And beyond that, the milieu is CIA, not NSA, but CIA. The point being that the NSA's technology, as evidenced by the, quote, shadow brokers, unquote, releasing NSA hacking tools online and making them available to anyone, the NSA's technology is fundamentally compromised. And indeed, the architecture, the operational architecture of the NSA is in the hands of unnamed third parties, and some named third parties, including The Intercept of Pierre Omidyar and WikiLeaks. The point being that damn bloody well near not anyone, but it would be relatively simple for one of those compromising elements to start a third world war by activating that NSA technology, that technology that Barack Obama placed on Russian computer systems. Again, a stunning development. And we're to believe basically that Putin did this after a phone call from Barack Obama. And there is no indication that Vladimir Putin has lost his mind. And if that is in fact the case, and it is, then that places Barack Obama's exit from the White House in the direst of circumstances. Basically, he has laid the groundwork for a third world War. After that, we're going to review another very important story that we looked at in For the Record 964. In April of this year, in response to what we are told, or what we were told, was a Russian-authorized Syrian sarin gas attack on a jihadist-held area in Syria. The U.S. fired cruise missiles at a Syrian airbase. It turns out that not only was there not a sarin attack, but that what apparently took place was that Russia and Syria implemented an airstrike on a building that was a known jihadist meeting place at a time when top jihadist leaders, including Nusra Front, a.k.a. Al-Qaeda, leadership was going to be present. That building also was a storage place for chemicals that were used for decontaminating corpses and also explosives and weaponry. It appears that secondary explosions from that attack generated a toxic cloud, and that is what was afflicting the locals. More to the point, what Russia did was to authorize, and this was apparently very unusual, the use of a smart bomb, a guided 500-pound bomb by the Syrian Air Force. This is unusual procedure by Russia. And they, to all credible information, gave extensive warning to multiple U.S. military and civilian intelligence agencies and operatives, and this was well known. It wasn't that they authorized a Syrian sarin strike, as we are told. Rather, they authorized the use of a smart bomb against jihadists, and this was well known by U.S. authorities. And when Trump basically alleged that this was done by Russia / Syria / so forth, it is simply put not only a lie, but a lie that can be extensively documented by responsible sources within the U.S. national security establishment. This was reported by Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, whose work on the My Lai massacre for the New York Times is probably best known. However, Hersh was not able to get this published in the American press. He got it published in Die Welt from Germany. One of the things that makes the whole situation with regard to the new Cold War so perilous is that with the cyber weapons that have been placed on Russian computer networks, anybody could activate those. And we noted in For the Record 959 that Andrew Auernheimer, a.k.a. Weave, a brilliant Nazi hacker, now, by the way, stationed or physically residing in Ukraine, was not only the person who apparently generated the phony documents and very possibly the hack into Emmanuel Macron's French presidential campaign. He also orchestrated the online threat campaign against CNN staffers. This followed a video which was doctored, and it made someone with apparently Trump's face appearing to bully someone in a professional wrestling context that was labeled CNN. The meme got circulated on the internet that this was generated by a 15-year-old, obviously teenager. That turns out not to have been true, but what is significant is that once that got going, Auernheimer successfully organized American fascists and Nazis, quote, alt-right, unquote, in the Daily Stormer orbit to begin threatening CNN and their families. Just think of what someone as brilliant as Auernheimer and with his hacking skills could do with those NSA tools on Russian security, Russian computer networks. Alan Heimer, not incidentally, a guest at Greenwald and Laura Poitras's party in celebration of their recipient, their receipt of the Polk Award. There was another report in the media that said that once again Syria and Russia were planning a sarin attack, and that there were threats by the Trump administration to heavily punish the perpetrators of that attack. That eventually was, I guess one could say, downplayed. We are told, nope, because of the threats they have, that is to say Russia and Syria, have backed off on that. One wonders what that was really all about. Did that come from jihadist sources, or who? Again, the confusion in so much of this is such that that information could have come from just about anybody.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
And we're going to take a look at one of the key figures who is not receiving the scrutiny that he deserves. He is fundamental to the Trump campaign's dealings, or the Trump Team Trump's dealings with Russia, dating back to the middle part of the last decade. That man's name is Felix Sater, S-A-T-E-R. He is a Russian immigrant with strong links to A, Russian organized crime, B, even more importantly, the American mafia, C, perhaps more importantly still, he is an informant for the FBI. That's the same FBI whose director, James Comey, was quite obviously interfering in the U.S. election on behalf of Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. If we're to believe what we're being told, that makes James Comey a Russian operative, or at least a Russian stooge or dupe, and I just don't buy that. Most importantly, Sater, again, fundamental to the whole Russia, Team Trump dealings with Russia, that we're now being told is, quote, Russiagate, unquote, has worked as a contract agent for the CIA. And we're going to review Sater's dealings with Russia as late as the fall of 2015. He was involved with a project to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, that put on hold while Trump ran for president. And then in January of this year, Sater was working with Trump's lawyer and an unnamed Ukrainian businessman to network with Russians in order to modify or lift sanctions against Russia. That is what we have on tap. And we're going to get right into it. From Politico, an article by Josh Gerstein, G-E-R-S-T-E-I-N, from June 27th of 2017. Feds won't release redacted intelligence report on Russian election meddling. Now, this alludes to, or actually is on the subject of, a Freedom of Information Act suit that was brought by the Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC. They said that the unclassified report omitted critical technical evidence, unquote, that could help the public assess U.S. intelligence agencies' claims that Russia did make an effort to affect the outcome of the 2016 race. However, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence not only refused to release the unclassified version, but they said that even a redacted version would be a field day for Russian intelligence agents, because it would give them information that they could use and that it could prove fatal to U.S. intelligence assets. Beyond that, the Deputy Director of National Intelligence for Intelligence Integration, a guy named Edward Gistaro, G-I-S-T-A-R-O, said that even a completely blacked-out report, a completely redacted report, could not be released because it would compromise national security. Well, I will guarantee you that Russian intelligence knows a hell of a lot more than anybody in this country about this situation. And even, again, the notion that this jive about the high-profile hacks where the hackers use Bitly technology, making it available to the entire world, use comical operational security that in which the Cyrillic metadata, the address of the institution for which the hackers or alleged hackers were working, the names of the alleged hackers, their email addresses are all available from this top secret, sinister Russian meddling in our elections. Again, I've done a number of shows about the high profile hacks, and it is basically a cyber version of the painting of Oswald Witt. It is very much like Oswald's, or quote, Oswald's, unquote, trip to Mexico City. It is absolutely ridiculous. Again, from Politico, June 27th of 2017, by Josh Gerstein, feds won't release redacted intelligence report on Russian election meddling. The full article is in, or most of the article is in the written description for this program. Taking an excerpt, the intelligence official argued that a redacted version of the original report would allow a trained eye to assess, quote, comparative weight, unquote, of human intelligence and signals intelligence reporting included in the compendium. Release of some of the information the privacy-focused organization wants made public, quote, could prove fatal to U.S. human intelligence sources. Deputy Director of National Intelligence for Intelligence Integration Edward Gistaro warned. Gistaro, here's the blockbuster here. Gistaro also appears to argue that even if officials blacked out the whole report, again, Gistaro also appears to argue that even if officials blacked out the whole report, highly classified information would be at risk. Quote, I agree with the National Intelligence Council that a heavily or even fully redacted version of the classified report cannot be publicly released without jeopardizing national security information properly classified as secret or top secret, he wrote. Quote, the ODN, then skipping down, the ODNI should release the complete report to the Electronic Privacy Information Center so that the public and the Congress can understand the full extent of the Russian interference with the 2016 presidential election, EPIC's Mark Rotenberg told Politico Tuesday. Again, quoting, it is already clear that government secrecy is frustrating meaningful oversight. The FBI, for example, will not even identify the states that were targeted by Russia. And again, that speaks for itself. Even a fully redacted report would compromise intelligence information. It could be dangerous. Well, I think the definitive editorial insight into that statement comes, again, from the book They Thought They Were Free, The Germans, 1933 to 1945, by Milton Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, published in softcover by the University of Chicago Press. And in a chapter called But Then It Was Too Late, there is an interview with a German college professor opposed to Hitler, opposed to Nazism, who lived through the rise of Hitler and Nazism and lived to tell about it. And he described it subjectively, that is to say, living through the rise of Hitler, living through the rise of Nazism, living through the rise of the Third Reich, in its essence as this. Now, compare this to what you just heard about. Even a fully redacted report could be dangerous, so we can't release it. And Milton Mayer relates this interview. What happened here, i.e. in Germany, was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand because of national security. So dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. This separation of government from people, this widening of the gap took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of the government growing remoter and remoter. Again, the first part of that, what happened here was a gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand because of national security, so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. Again, an ominous similarity, or ominous resonance, I perhaps should say.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Reviewing an important article, very important article, on the S-blank-blank-blank scary article that we looked at in For the Record 964, this from the Washington Post of June 23rd of 2017 by Greg Miller, Ellen Nakashima, and Adam Entus, E-N-T-O-U-S, Obama's secret struggle to punish Russia for Putin's election assault. And again, this is about this particular, about the report about Russian election meddling. And note a number of things. We're going to talk about Obama placing cyber weaponry developed by the airtight security of the NSA with its airtight operational security on Russian computer systems. But note that the information alleging that Vladimir Putin allegedly ordered the entire, quote, hacking, unquote, quote, meddling, unquote, campaign personally was from information which initially the NSA was skeptical of, and the decisive information came from a foreign intelligence source that the NSA was skeptical of. The CIA, however, apparently endorsed it. Note again that Snowden and the entire team Snowden at one level is fascist and as far to the right as you get, but at another level, and at another level is CIA, not NSA, but CIA, from that Washington Post article about the report. Inside was an intelligence bombshell, a report drawn from sourcing deep inside the Russian government that detailed Russian President Vladimir Putin's direct involvement in a cyber campaign to disrupt and discredit the U.S. presidential race. The intelligence captured Putin's specific instructions on the operation's audacious objectives, defeat, or at least damage the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and help elect her opponent Donald Trump. At that point, the outlines of the Russian assault on the U.S. election were increasingly apparent. And again, this is so, such a crock, but I'm just going to play it and read it with a straight face. Hackers with ties to Russian intelligence services had been rummaging through Democratic Party computer networks, as well as some Republican systems, for more than a year. In July, the FBI had opened an investigation of contacts between Russian officials and Trump associates. And on July 22nd, nearly 20,000 emails stolen from the Democratic National Committee were dumped online by WikiLeaks. But at the highest levels of government, among those responsible for managing the crisis, the first moment of true foreboding about Russia's intentions arrived with that, drumroll please, CIA intelligence, skipping down. It took time for other parts of the intelligence community to endorse the CIA's views. Only in the administration's final weeks in office did it tell the public in a declassified report what officials had learned from Brennan in August, that Putin was working to elect Trump. Despite the intelligence the CIA had produced, other agencies were slower to endorse a conclusion that Putin was personally directing the operation and wanted to help Trump. It was definitely compelling, but it was not definitive, said one senior administration official. We needed more, unquote. Some of the most critical technical intelligence on Russia came from another country, officials said. Because of the source of the material, the NSA was reluctant to view it with high confidence. Quote, the most difficult measure to evaluate is one that Obama alluded to only in the most oblique fashion when announcing the U.S. response. We will continue to take a variety of actions at a time and place of our choosing, some of which will not be publicized, unquote, he said in a statement released by the White House. He was referring in part to a cyber operation that was designed to be detected by Moscow but not cause significant damage, officials said. The operation, which entailed implanting computer code in sensitive computer systems that Russia was bound to find, served only as a reminder to Moscow of the United States' cyber reach. But Obama also signed the secret finding, officials said, listen to this, authorizing a new covert program involving the NSA, the CIA, and the U.S. Cyber Command. Obama declined to comment for this article, but the spokesman issued a statement, quote, this situation was taken extremely seriously, as is evident by President Obama raising this issue directly with President Putin. Again, note that Obama called Putin on the hotline, and we are to believe that even after that, Putin personally authorized the attempts at hacking the U.S. election, thereby basically placing a poison pill on any conceivable benefit Russia could have derived from friendly relations with a Trump administration. We are to believe, basically, that Putin completely lost his mind. That dog will not hunt. Once more, Obama declined to comment for this article, but a spokesman issued a statement. This situation was taken extremely seriously, as is evident by President Obama raising this issue directly with President Putin. 17 intelligence agencies issuing an extraordinary public statement. Our homeland security officials working relentlessly to bolster the cyber defenses of voting infrastructure around the country. The president directing a comprehensive intelligence review and ultimately issuing a robust response, including shutting down two Russian compounds, sanctioning 9 Russian entities and individuals, and ejecting 35 Russian diplomats from the country. The cyber operation is still in its early stages and involves deploying, quote, implants, unquote, in Russian networks deemed, quote, important to the adversary and that would cause them pain and discomfort if they were disrupted, unquote, a former U.S. official said. The implants were developed by the NSA and designed so that they could be triggered remotely as part of a retaliatory cyber strike in the face of Russian aggression, whether an attack on the power grid or interference in a future presidential race. Officials familiar with the measures said that there was concern among some of in the administration that the damage caused by the implants could be difficult to contain, unquote. Now, again, the implants were developed by the NSA and designed so that they could be triggered remotely as part of a retaliatory cyber strike in the face of Russian aggression, whether an attack on the power grid or interference in a future presidential race. Well, that part, of course, is very reassuring. If these implants were developed by the NSA, of course, has absolutely airtight security around its operations. Nothing to do with NSA has been compromised in the least, so we can all heave a sigh of relief knowing that a Third World War will not be triggered by this airtight security around NSA's operations, obviously. That statement is dripping with irony. The NSA is fundamentally compromised. It would not surprise me one bit if, in fact, the CIA, utilizing the networks that were developed by Alan Dulles, in which CIA people were implanted in various federal agencies, it would not surprise me if the CIA was, in fact, blackmailing the NSA. Certainly, it is a matter of record that there is a dead man switch that would operationally destroy the NSA if something were to happen to Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, now residing, by the way, in Russia. And, of course, the, quote, shadow brokers, unquote, released NSA hacking tools online in that clumsy Boris and Natasha operation that we talked about in For the Record programs 923 and 924. It turned out that the shadow brokers, when they once again broke silence earlier this year, their communiques, in addition to the broken English, the Boris and Natasha-like BS, also was the communiques were replete with white supremacist propaganda, which I think is something of an indication about their real nature. They alleged that they were actually NSA insiders, people who were like the Oath Keepers. In other words, people who were releasing that information in order to get Trump to adhere more closely to his campaign promises. And again, one of the things that is so scary about those NSA cyber weapons having been placed on Russian computer networks, again, developed by the NSA, which is completely compromised at this point, there are people who could exploit that, even if the command does not go down from the U.S., or at least from the White House, to begin using those implants. God knows who else could do it. CIA, perhaps, or someone else. From the Southern Poverty Law Center of July 5th of 2017, an article by Keegan, K-E-E-G-A-N, Hanks, H-A-N-K-E-S, Daily Stormer troll army threatens CNN staffers over Reddit user behind Trump, CNN, GIF. The background to this, there was, again, a doctored video apparently showing that someone supposed to be Donald Trump manhandling a figure in a wrestling match that was CNN. The alleged author of that GIF was initially represented as a 15-year-old. That got widely circulated online. It turned out not to be true. But again, Andrew Auernheimer, a brilliant Nazi hacker, now resident, by the way, in Ukraine, and an honored guest at Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras's Polk Award acceptance party, was the apparent organizer of this, well, one could call it perhaps a cyberbullying or cyber terror campaign against CNN staffers, because again, they were allegedly bullying a 15-year-old online. It turned out not to be true. Skipping down, quoting Auernheimer, and again, what one wants to think about is how easy it would be, or the possibility that someone like Auernheimer or that someone along those lines could trigger that NSA technology on Russian computer networks. Quoting Auernheimer here, just like CNN tracked down this child and used media exposure as a bludgeon against him for posting truthful and funny things that they don't like, we are going to begin tracking down their families as a bludgeon against them for publishing seditiously fraudulent things that we don't like, wrote Auernheimer. Quote, CNN, this is your one singular chance to walk back this behavior of public blackmail. You have 1 week to fix this, unquote. Auernheimer's list of demands includes the public firing of the K-File team, a denouncement of their alleged threats, a $50,000 college scholarship for the individual, and a public assurance that, quote, he and his family will never be harmed by your organization, unquote. And then, according to CNN, the author, who has a name I can't, a handle I can't say on the air, this person is apparently something like 35 or 36 years old. He's not a 15-year-old. But going on to what Auernheimer said, and again, this was accompanied by an online bullying slash threat campaign against CNN and its employees. Quote, we are going to track down your parents. We are going to track down your siblings. We are going to track down your spouses. We are going to track down your children. Because, hey, that's what you guys get to do, right? We're going to see how you like it when our reporters are hunting down your children, continued Auernheimer. Auernheimer instructed CNN employees that do not want to be doxxed to quit within the week and denounce the organization's alleged blackmail. Quote, we didn't make these rules, you did, and now we're going to force you to play by them. Hope you enjoy what is coming, you filthy rat kite bastards. Kill yourselves, kite news fakers. You deserve every single bit of what you are about to get, unquote, concluded Auernheimer. The call to kill the lying mass of S-blank-blank-blank that is CNN, unquote, posted to 4chan's politically incorrect forum, quote, within hours, personal information for multiple CNN staffers and their family members, alongside images and GIFs of individuals with CNN superimposed over their faces being shot in the head, appeared in the comments of the posting. The point being, under the circumstances, that in the present political atmosphere, doing something like positioning NSA cyber weapons on Russian computer networks, because what is, frankly, the ludicrous assertion that Russia was behind the high-profile hacks, again, it's a real, if I hadn't seen it myself, this clown A blank blank S blank 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 would be laughable. But unfortunately, there is nothing funny about what is going on. And I think the fact that even a fully redacted report would be deemed unacceptable is an indication of what is really going on.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Reviewing an article from an article we spoke about last week from Die Welt in Germany, American investigative reporter Seymour Hersh, best known for his reportage on the My Lai massacre during the Vietnam War for the New York Times, published an article called Trump's Red Line from Die Welt of June 25th of 2017. The highlights. The Syrian target at Khan, K-H-A-N, Sheikhoun, S-H-E-I-K-H-O-U-N, as shared with the Americans at Doha, was depicted as a two-story cinder block building in the northern part of town. Russian intelligence, which is shared when necessary with Syria and the U.S. as part of their joint fight against jihadist groups, had established that a high-level meeting of jihadist leaders was to take place in the building, including representatives of Ahrar al-Sham and the al-Qaeda-affiliated group formerly known as Jabhat al-Nusra. The groups had recently joined forces and controlled the town and surrounding area. Russian intelligence depicted the cinder block building as a command and control center that housed a grocery and other commercial premises on its ground floor, with other essential shops nearby, including a fabric shop and an electronics store. The rebels control the population by controlling the distribution of goods that people need to live: food, water, cooking oil, propane, gas, fertilizers for growing their crops, and insecticides to protect the crops, a senior advisor to the American intelligence community who had served in senior positions in the Defense Department and Central Intelligence Agency told me. The basement was used as a storage for rockets, weapons, and ammunition, as well as products that could be distributed for free to the community, among them medicines and chlorine-based decontaminants for cleansing the bodies of the dead before burial. The meeting place of regional headquarters was on the floor above. It was an established meeting place, the senior advisor said, a long-time facility that would have had security, weapons, communications, files, and a map center. The Russians were intent on confirming their intelligence and deployed a drone for days above the site to monitor communications and develop what is known in the intelligence community as a POL, a pattern of life. The goal was to take note of those going in and out of the building and to track weapons being moved back and forth, including rockets and ammunition. Russian and Syrian intelligence officials who coordinate operations closely with the American command posts made it clear that the planned strike on Khan Sheikhoun was special because of the high-value target. It was a red-hot change. The mission was out of the ordinary. Scrub the sked, the senior advisor told me. Every operations officer in the region, in the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, CIA, and NSA, quote, had to know there was something going on. The Russians gave the Syrian Air Force a guided bomb, and that was a rarity. They're skimpy with their guided bombs and rarely share them with the Syrian Air Force. And the Syrians assigned their best pilot to the mission with the best wingman, unquote. The advance intelligence on the target as supplied by the Russians was given the highest possible score inside the American community. The execute order governing U.S. military operations in theater, which was issued by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, provides instructions that demarcate the relationship between the American and Russian forces operating in Syria. It's like an ops order. Here's what you're authorized to do, skipping down. When we get a hot tip about the command and control facility, the advisor added, referring to the target in Khan Sheikhoun, we do what we can to help them act on it. This was not a chemical weapons strike, the advisor said. That's a fairy tale. If so, everyone involved in transferring, loading, and arming the weapon, you've got to make it appear like a regular 500-pound conventional bomb, would be wearing hazmat-protective clothing in case of a leak. There would be very little chance of survival without such gear. Military-grade sarin includes additives designed to increase toxicity and lethality. Every batch that comes out is weaponized, is maximized for death. That is why it is made. It is odorless and invisible, and death can come within a minute. No cloud. Why produce a weapon that people can run away from? The target was struck at 6:55 a.m. on April 4th, just before midnight in Washington. A bomb damage assessment, or BDA, by the U.S. military later determined that the heat and force of the 500-pound Syrian bomb triggered a series of secondary explosions that could have generated a huge toxic cloud that began to spread over the town, formed by the release of the fertilizers, disinfectants, and other goods stored in the basement, its effect magnified by the dense morning air, which trapped the fumes close to the ground. And again, skipping down, and noting that jihadist forces claim, yep, this was a sarin strike, and that when Trump acted, he acted in contravention of everything he was told by expert sources on the ground. The crisis slid into the background by the end of April as Russia, Syria, and the U.S. remained focused on annihilating ISIS and the militias of al-Qaeda. Some of those who had worked through the crisis, however, were left with lingering concerns. The Salafists and jihadists got everything they wanted out of their hyped-up Syrian nerve gas ploy, the senior advisor to the U.S. intelligence community told me, referring to the flare-up of tensions between Syria, Russia, and America. The issue is, what if there's another false flag sarin attack credited to hated Syria? Trump has upped the ante and painted himself into a corner with his decision to bomb. And do not think these guys are not planning the next faked attack. Trump will have no choice but to bomb again and harder. He's incapable of saying he made a mistake. What is not being said in that article is something that we have talked about for years now, more than a decade and a half, since the September 11th attacks, which is that jihadist elements derived from the Muslim Brotherhood are being used as proxy warriors, much as they were in Afghanistan. They were used in the Balkans, in the former Yugoslavia, and they are being used in Syria. We concluded For the Record 964 with the following story. White House says Syria's Assad preparing another chemical attack, warns of heavy penalty, unquote. This by Abby Phillip and Dan LaMothe, or LaMothe, L-A-M-O-T-H-E, from the Washington Post of June 26th. Subsequently, this was, although Sean Spicer gave it credibility, who said, nope, they're no longer planning it. You know, we got word of it, and they're scared, et cetera, et cetera. The point being how easy it would be for elements, who knows who, jihadist elements, some of their sympathetic elements within CIA or other intelligence services, the Saudis, the Israelis, who are now allied with Saudi Arabia, a grotesque arrangement that, grotesque is about as good a word as any. The point being how easy it would be for a scenario like this to be gamed with provocation, and again, with cyber weapons developed by the airtight, secure NSA having been placed by good old Obama on Russian computer networks, the possibilities of a third world war should not be readily discounted. We're being told again, you know, that Russia was meddling in the U.S. election. What is not receiving a lot of attention is who is at the epicenter of the Trump business empires or Team Trump's dealings with Russia. A guy named Felix Sater, formerly spelled S-A-T-T-E-R, now S-A-T-E-R, is a longtime associate of the Trump empire. From Forbes magazine, well, let me talk a little bit about him. In For the Record 936, we talked about Sater when we read from The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. Sater's name appears with just one T in a host of places. There's the deed to his home, for example. It is also spelled with only one T on New York State court papers from his 1991 felony conviction for stabbing a man in the face with the stem of a margarita glass. The name Sater, with one T, also appears on federal court papers in a $40 million organized crime stock swindle he confessed to in 1998, a scheme that benefited him as well as the Genovese and Gambino crime families. The stock swindle involved fake stock brokerage firms using high-powered tactics to get naive people to buy worthless shares from Sater and his mob friends. He got off very lightly, did Felix Sater. More from The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. Again, we spoke about this in For the Record 936 and in For the Record 945. There is every indication that the extraordinarily lenient treatment resulted from Sater playing a get-out-of-jail-free card. Shortly before his secret guilty plea, Sater became a freelance operative of the Central Intelligence Agency. One of his fellow stock swindlers, Salvatore Loria, wrote a book about it. The Scorpion and the Frog is described on its cover as, quote, the true story of one man's fraudulent rise and fall in the Wall Street of the 90s, unquote. According to Loria and the court files that have been unsealed, Sater helped the CIA buy small missiles before they got the terrorists. He also provided other purported national security services for a reported fee of $300,000. Stories abound as to what else Sater may or may not have done in the arena of national security. And from the Seattle Times of July 10th of this year, a New York Times story by Steve Aver, or Ever, E-V-E-R, and Megan Twohey, M-E-G-A-N-T-W-O-H-E-Y, how the Miss Universe pageant led to Trump's son meeting with a Russian lawyer, skipping down. Felix Sater worked on a plan for a Trump Tower in Moscow as recently as the fall of 2015, i.e. a year and a half ago, but he said that had come to a halt because of Trump's presidential campaign. And that is, again, in the fall of 2015, from Forbes magazine of March 28th of 2015 by Chase Peterson Withorn, that's P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N hyphen W-I-T-H-O-R-N, Inside Trump's Russia Connections, The Felon and the Pop Star, skipping down. Nevertheless, in late January of 2017, Sater and the Ukrainian lawmaker reportedly met with Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, at a New York hotel. According to the New York Times, they discussed a plan that involved the U.S. lifting sanctions against Russia, and Cohen said he hand-delivered the plan in a sealed envelope to then-National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Cohen later denied delivering the envelope to anyone in the White House, according to the Washington Post. The point being that the point man for Team Trump and Russia, dating back to the middle of the last decade, tracking forward to the fall of 2015 with a proposed deal for a Trump Tower in Moscow, and in January of this year, after the election, when Safer, a Ukrainian lawmaker, and Trump's attorney were discussing a plan to lift sanctions. At the core of this is Felix Safer, tied to the American mob, Russian organized crime, more importantly, an informant for the FBI, and a contract agent for the CIA. And David K. Johnston writes in The Making of Donald Trump, again, he also provided other purported national security services for a reported fee of $300,000. Stories abound as to what else Safer may or may not have done in the arena of national security, whether the activities of the likes of Safer, Snowden, and God knows who and what else was up in the Third World War. Well, we will see. This concludes For the Record program number 965. Are we going to have a Third World War? This is being recorded on July 11th of the year 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.